This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Larry Allen of Allen Federal. You can find Larry at allenfederal.com. While you're there, sign up for his weekly newsletter. You'll get it Monday morning. It will cover three or four of the hot stories of the week. Great read. Sign up. Larry, welcome to the show.
Mark, thanks for having me. It's always great to be here.
All right. Today's show is everything strategic sourcing. So, Larry, let's take us through the concept of strategic sourcing, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of the schedules where this first applied.
Mark, in the federal government arena, strategic sourcing is all about leveraging the government's collective buying power to buy what they're already buying more cheaply. Throw in a little bit of an opportunity for small businesses to continue to keep competing. But the government is ultimately trying to down-select the number of companies that it's doing business with, trying to create commoditized solutions across multiple platforms, and drive down prices as deeply as they can in order to save money. In some areas, that's probably a very good thing, and certainly the most notable project to date in this arena is the Office Supply Strategic Sourcing Initiative. In some areas, I think the strategic sourcing approach the government has chosen, the benefits remain to be seen. Not everything fits into that commodity type platform. So how the government moves forward in implementing strategic sourcing into things like more complex product purchases or even professional services, I think will be a challenge.
Okay. Now, let's talk a bit. If you're on LinkedIn at all, and Larry and I are, you see Sam Borenstein, who is a professor at, I forget the school up in New Jersey, but he's been studying small business and government contracting for a long time. He is not a fan of SSI, and there's a lot of postings around this. One of the postings earlier today indicated that, and maybe we'll talk about this later, but GSA is going to charge 2% IFF for the latest iteration for Jansan. Did you hear this?
I did see that. GSA is talking about increasing its fee. Currently in the schedules program, if you're buying straight through a schedule, buyers pay a 0.75% industrial funding fee. GSA is looking at increasing that fee for Jansan and potentially other strategic sourcing contracts because of the value that they feel that these types of solutions are providing to federal buyers, the fact that they can charge a little bit more percentage-wise based on the lower contract price so they can still deliver good overall pricing to federal customers, and the fact that GSA is doing a little bit more in terms of managing the strategic sourcing program than it does on a straight multiple award schedule buy, and in their minds anyway, that justifies the higher fee. Whether federal buyers will agree with that remains to be seen. 2% certainly is a little high. On the other hand, GSA is acutely aware of the fact that it needs to maintain its own cash flow. So I suspect that that mathematical reality had something to do with the fee as well.
Okay. let's talk about specifically Schedule 75 for a while. When strategic sourcing, the BPA came out, there were about 540, 535 vendors on Schedule 75. The BPA, the strategic sourcing BPA, went to how many?
15. 15 companies, Mark, 13 small businesses and two large businesses. And what's happened if you weren't one of those 15 awardees, then your schedule's business really suffered. And GSA has made a concerted effort to drive agencies to the strategic sourcing contract. Their own estimate that they gave me last week is that they believe 40% of office supply buys in the federal government now go through the office supply strategic sourcing contract. So they go to those lucky 15. But of course, you and I know, Mark, that...
Lucky two.
Yeah, it's really it, because...
Well, maybe three.
Well, while some of the small businesses on the strategic sourcing agreement get some decent business, certainly the two largest winners are Office Depot and Staples, the two largest companies on the on that BPA. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with, you know, the ability and people to trust those brand names and to understand that, you know, they can set it and forget it. And that it used to be, Mark, nobody in the government ever questioned you if you ever went with IBM. And it's the right. same type of thing here. Nobody yeah. really questions you if you go with a name brand like Staples or Office Depot.
Right. Well, just as a statistical plug here, in FY12, Office Depot did $63 million and Staples did $53 million. So roughly $116, $117 counting the change between the two. On the entire schedule, 75 that year, we had $724 million. So those two companies took roughly 15% of the entire spend.
Right. So you have to have those top two, and then everybody else comes below them for what they can get. Mm-hmm. And there are some smaller businesses that have
to,
been...
To be fair,
right.
that applies to schedules where, there's no SSI.
That's very true as well. The old 80-20 rule, 80% of the business goes to the top 20% of the contractors, almost regardless of what schedule you're talking about. But, you know, there are some small businesses who have done pretty well in terms of generating their own strategic sourcing business. But there have been an awful lot more small businesses, even some of the ones on the SSI, who have not been able to figure out what they need to do to grow their business or to maintain their business. And they're kind of falling by the wayside. And now, Mark, we are coming up with planning for the OS3 contract, the third iteration of the office supply contract. GSA is going to be having an industry day in August in New York to talk about what their plans are for OS3. Initially, I've been told that they're going to take a slight departure from the contract, which up till now, all of these strategic sourcing agreements have been based on GSA schedules, blanket purchase agreements with the schedule as the underlying contract. Reportedly, GSA is going to depart from that and make the OS3 contract a straight commercial item contract that does not rely on somebody already having a schedule.
Okay. does that mean that they'll do away with the Ability One?
Well, certainly that is a concern, and it's a concern because whenever you get into one of these, what I call set it and forget it type contracts, even though there are Ability One use provisions in the current contract, unless you have somebody overseeing it, Mark, the reality is that Ability One use is very problematic. Ability One, for your listeners not familiar with it, is a mandatory supply program that is supposed to benefit blind and severely handicapped individuals and agencies that sell through the Ability One program. And in the current office supply strategic sourcing agreement, there is mandatory substitution language so that if you're selling a commercial item that competes with an Ability One item, you're supposed to not ship that commercial item. You're supposed to compete and sell the Ability One item. To some degree, that's happening, but in the discussions I've had with federal agencies, it's not happening as often as they think it's happening. So GSA, I think, is going to plan on tightening up the Ability One use provisions in the next iteration of the contract, make it a maybe a past performance evaluation factor, some other penalty put in so that if you don't meet some mandatory minimum use of Ability One items as an OS3 contract holder, your contract status could be in jeopardy.
Okay. So that would be akin to not hitting $25,000 a year on your current schedule and getting the nasty gram.
Yes, exactly,
saying,
right.
saying, explain yourself.
Thanks for coming into our schedules program. You have a minimum amount of time to clean up your act.
Right. Okay. All right. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back talking about strategic sourcing after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal. We're discussing all things strategic sourcing. Larry, we have the idea that at least five schedules over the next 3 years will be under siege, if you will. and one of them, we're going to talk about a couple, but one of them is 51V, the hardware superstore. Parts of Schedule 71, the seating, I think you were yes. indicating. Managed prints definitely in that queue, kind of partway there.
Yes, managed print is about halfway done. There's the other half that has yet to do. You referenced janitorial and sanitary supplies as being something that's underway currently. So that's definitely coming up for FY14. And then we've been told by GSA that at least some sort of service will be included in the next round, most likely something around a maintenance service. As they branch out beyond basic products.
Okay, so when we're talking maintenance service, are we talking standard janitorial? Because everything beyond that starts to get a little murky as far as package deals go.
And warranties and things of that nature. I think what GSA has in mind is what they call break-fix in the industry, kind of basic. If your printer blows up, you call a technician and they come and fix it for you. But to your point, that's kind of stripping out something that is often done in a package deal now. And a lot of people have their soup to nuts office supply contracts where they expect break fix to be part of the package.
Mm-hmm. So when you said that managed print is only like partway there, what do you mean?
Well, there are four components in GSA's managed print services strategic sourcing initiative, and it's been a little while since I've looked at them, but GSA has put the two basic parts in, the ability to do an analysis and the ability to do the counts that you need to do in order mm-hmm. to understand what current printing and document management behavior is. The big one that is left to be put into place, Mark, is the ability to actually offer managed print solutions that would logically follow after the initial evaluation work has been done. And then there's another ancillary services part that would round out the four offerings.
But there's only seven companies that really play in this game.
So far, managed print services has been dominated by the document manufacturers, so Xerox, Canon, all
HP,
of the HP,
yeah.
that crowd. I think GSA is anticipating that.
That crowd, they have colors?
I think GSA is anticipating that more dealers will come in when they get to the solutions part. Some of the people that we've seen play or at least try to play in the office supplies mm-hmm. arena that are branching out into managed print services, so we'll have to see what comes, but and then how that plays out, because even if you do get a dealer with a good reputation as an awardee, how effectively are they going to be able to compete with manufacturers who will be able to sell a lot of things to their customer and also raise questions about warranty issues and who gets to fix things? Some of the OEMs particularly are well known for raising the specter of a problem there.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you talk about the service component, I know, for instance, that a couple of the players, Xerox has a very strong service component. HP obviously has components for virtually any aspect of IT imaginable. I'm assuming Lexmark, Canon, and the others have some sort of service component too. But I know that that Xerox does something slightly different. When they go in to do an analysis, they say this is a vendor neutral analysis. They aren't going in just to say you need Xerox stuff. They're going in to say this is how you need to manage this service. So,
taking the consulting to a different level, and frankly, I think one that the government would hope most other evaluators would go to.
Mm-hmm.
But that remains to be seen as well. But you know, but then if they do that, then the ability for third-party dealers to compete again would be. It's possible, but they would be facing a steeper climb.
Yeah. It's kind of odd, though, because the only other time that I remember seeing the vendor neutral was in the IT training arena. Learning Tree has a vendor neutral. They are not an authorized Microsoft, Cisco, blah, blah, blah trainer. They do what they call vendor neutral training that is industry standard or top line, but it's neutral to the vendor. So when you're a buyer of IT training, they view that as a big plus. So I thought it was pretty cool that Xerox did it too. Let's go to 51 for a minute. This to me looks very similar to office supplies in that there are two truly large firms in here.
Two truly large firms that have had varying degrees of direct participation in the government market over the past few years, and a lot of them traditionally, Mark, have preferred to sell through resellers, and in the case of at least one of the big OEMs, resellers that specialize in selling to the federal market. So those are typically smaller businesses again, and the question here is if you're going to go to strategic sourcing with the idea, remember at the top of the show I mentioned the idea here is to drive the pricing down. A lot of people in government feel that anytime you're dealing directly with the manufacturer, you're always going to get a better price than if you're dealing through a third-party intermediary. Government listeners, that's not always true. It really depends on the commercial distribution method that this company has set up. But nevertheless, there's certainly that belief system in place. And it poses some interesting challenges, not just for the third-party resellers, but for the manufacturers. Do they want to be the ones on the hook directly for contract performance? Do they want to have the infrastructure necessary to build up and support this type of contract? Do they want even to have things standardized?
And well, look at it a slightly different way. A lot of the contract, or a lot of the manufacturers you're talking about, had that relationship once upon a time, decided it was not worth the headache, and went to the channel.
Yes, exactly right. And I think one of the reasons, there are multiple reasons why. One was pricing variability vis-a-vis the commercial market, and some of it also was the international source of supply rules, which we know are unique in the government.
And very difficult.
Can't have a Chinese-made screwdriver.
Right.
These issues don't necessarily resolve when you go to a strategic sourcing model. In fact, some of them, I think, become more intense as the downward pricing pressure is ramped up on the government side. There's a lot of, pressure, a lot of people who say, gee, you know, is anybody going to really look all that closely to see where this tool comes from? And maybe I can offer it for a cheaper price and still make my markup I need to live on. I think that's very dangerous. But inevitably, if the government is expecting a Cadillac to be delivered for a Chevrolet price, they need to look under the hood to make sure that they're getting what they think they're getting.
Getting an engine.
Right. Well, they also need to understand that nobody, not even the government, can get a Cadillac for a Chevrolet price.
True. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Larry Allen. Larry is truly one of the procurement experts, the available as a consultant, as am I. But Larry's specialty is all things GSA contract procurement, and he's really good at what he does. Again, allenfederal.com, get the newsletter. But, you know, let's discuss, Larry. We have at least five schedules coming up that are going to be subjected to SSI, so some sort of BPA coming down the pike like a sledgehammer. What do companies need to do to get ready for this thing?
Well, if I were a company, Mark, that knew that a strategic sourcing initiative was coming to my contract, I would look at two things right off the bat. First of all, how commodity-like or how susceptible to commoditization are the products or services that I'm providing? Fact is, some of these things are very susceptible to commoditization, and other things that are complex are not. So right away, you need to make a business decision about whether you're going to participate in a strategic sourcing initiative, because if the government feels that it's commoditizable, then you should be prepared to participate in some way, shape, or form. If, on the other hand, what you're doing is by its very nature complex and highly differentiating by individual engagement, then you may not want to jump right in with both feet on a strategic sourcing opportunity. So a go, no-go decision is always at the upfront part of this process. If you're going to make the decision to go, though, you need to understand a few things. First, you want to look very carefully at the proposed scope of the contract and just how much product you need and how much service you're going to need to provide. There are always, these things have core requirements, and you better be able to meet those core requirements in order to have a chance at getting the award. Similarly, you need to be able to understand to the extent that your product offerings intersect with the Ability One program, how you are going to be an Ability One distributor and how you're going to get passed and certified by Ability One people in order to be able to distribute their items. That's an upfront piece of work that you need to do. If you're a large business, you need to understand how you're going to support small business subcontractors. There's recent emphasis, it's always been part of a government contract with a larger business, but there's been a particularly strong recent emphasis here in that area. So, and you also need to understand how you're going to do your pricing. And as I mentioned, Mark, a lot of these contracts have market baskets where the market basket items are very low margin items, but they're required of you as a contract holder. So you have to figure out as a prospective offerer, all right, what else is it that I'm going to be able to sell through this contract that's going to make me cash flow positive if I participate, understanding that this initial set of items isn't going to be in that realm. So those are a few things. If you're a supplier, you need to understand what it is that you're getting into and do your homework. It's not going to be for everyone. But, you know, look, if it is something that's commoditizable, we know that GSA and has a multi-industry, multi-agency, rather, group of buyers set up. You know, you are going to want to try to participate in this in one way, shape, or form. If you're a manufacturer that's used to selling through resellers, you want to position yourself in such a way that you're not going to be shut out if your sole representative, your sole dealer distributor into the government market doesn't make the cut. So you want to definitely be looking at companies that have good business plans, have good track records already in selling to the government market, just how price competitive they are, what are their real relationships with different buyers and different government agencies. You don't want to ride one horse necessarily and have that horse not get out of the starting gate.
Mm-hmm.
So some manufacturers may want to look at offering contracts themselves. But again, that runs into the interesting issue of the market basket and whether or not your line of merchandise is sufficient enough to meet the minimum contract requirements. So you got to take a good look at that. So there's lots to look at now, well before any draft RFP or industry day, to make sure that you have some idea of whether this is good business for you and how you might succeed if you're going to win.
Yeah. On the manufacturer side, you and I both advise a number of manufacturers in the game. We came up with sort of a criteria list for selecting general partners. I modified it for a couple of my clients for selecting partners, contractors with schedules currently who have a better shot at making the cut. And one of those criteria was the length of time you've been on schedule as a contractor, where you fall in the particular food chain, because when we ran the numbers for 75 prior to the show, Schedule 75, we saw that, you know, yes, indeed, Office Depot and Staples are the big winners of this, but they've always been the big winners. So, you know, you may want a mix of a very large contractor, because we can assume the top two players in any schedule can win the SSI if they bid.
Yes.
But then you need that mix underneath. You need the set-aside type companies.
Right. You need service-disabled, veteran-owned small businesses. Ones that, by the way, are actual businesses. So you
right.
just can't take somebody's
no
word
pass
for
through.
It. Right. No pass-through. That'll get you in trouble by the company you keep. Women-owned businesses, 8A businesses, hub zone businesses. These are all things that manufacturers should be looking at in terms of their channel options, because each one is going to have a niche inside the government market and potentially have some good bona fide buyers that will buy the products that you are giving to that reseller to resell. I think you also want to make sure they've got people who are dedicated to the government market. You pointed out how long. What's the level of trust that they've built up? How can they demonstrate that they are a trusted supplier currently in the market? That goes a long way towards being able to get future business. You know, what type of compliance issues does that potential partner have? You know, we know that there are a very large number of False Claims Act allegations going on generally in the government market today.
Yep.
And surprisingly, Mark, not everybody, when they're seeking a business partner, bothers to ask the question, well, you know, is the Department of Justice knocking at your door? and, yeah, that's really a question that you need to ask, because you want to know if they're going to be in the game. They're going to know. You're going to know if particularly a manufacturer that's a big manufacturer with deep pockets. You know, look, DOJ is always looking for the deep pocketed people to get money from. So if your pockets are deeper than your business partners and they've been experiencing trouble, that would be a contraindication of doing business.
There you go. And we've discussed this in previous shows, but one of the criteria for any selective or strategic sourcing initiative is that level three.
Where you have to be able to provide level three data right off the bat. That's going to be non-negotiable. I would imagine that you have to stay on top of evolutionary changes in that part of the market. So if there's something that comes after level three, understanding that GSA is going to be looking for user data from you, so you're going to be expected to capture use data and be able to spit it back to GSA so that they can give their buyers reports on how much they bought, when they bought it, who they bought it from, things of that nature. Interestingly, they don't want to trust their own federal procurement data system to spit that information out. They'd rather have you as the contractor collect it. So
Interesting. One way to stay up on all of the level three info is through the GSA SmartPay site. So go to gsa.gov, just search on SmartPay, and you'll come up with a ton of information as a vendor. Look specifically for that level three. It's also one way to get back a little bit of that margin that you're ceding, because you can shop around your level three. You can shop around your credit card processing and get level three, usually, almost always, depending on the vendor, gets you a better processing fee.
That's right. And it's a little bit more, I guess, of a hassle on one hand to collect level three data. On the other hand, you are cutting your transaction fee. So if you're in an office segment like supplies, where most of the buys are made via purchase card, having that lower transaction fee should be part of your business plan. So that you know that, look, this is going to be low margin business overall. Maybe I can get a better 0.75% off of another bank by virtue of my taking level three
data. It doesn't
data.
Have to be a bank to process.
Right.
So even I process at level three. And believe me, I don't have a tremendous amount of volume, but I save a half point.
Right.
So what the heck? You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio. We'll be back right after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today, if you haven't figured it out, is Larry Allen of Allen Federal. AllenFederal.com, A-L-L-E-N, Federal.com. Larry, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, and it's called NITCP, is it strategic sourcing?
Well, it certainly looks like strategic sourcing, Mark. It was set up by GSA's Atlanta regional office to be a commodity IT program, the idea being to drive down prices for commonly bought IT items, and it was hung with the name NITCP, National Information Technology Commodity Procurement or Program, if you will. Not formally part of the FSSI program, but it sure really looks like it. And it's interesting to me for a couple of things. One is you see a lot today about the move to buy commodity IT. It's almost, Mark, like we're back in 1988.
Yep.
So bring back Lee Atwater. So, and yet we know that that's not really the way that the government buys a lot of IT today. They buy a lot of their IT as part of systems integrated services and solutions.
Right.
And you have people in OMB, Steve Van Roekel, the acting deputy director of management and former government CIO, saying, look, we want people to buy in the cloud. We want software as a service. We want storage as a service. None of that really sounds like it automatically lends itself to commoditization. And yet, GSA certainly isn't the only agency to put in a commodity IT contract. The VA has done it as well as a couple of other agencies. So the idea is to drive down pricing. And of course, listeners and regular readers know that the recent development in NITCP has been to open up a reverse auction criteria.
Oh, my favorite.
For this program. So not only as a contractor were you expected to give very competitive prices in order to get on the NITCP, GSA in its magnanimity has opened up the reverse auction component for this program. So where GSA will manage reverse auction procurements tied to NITCP buys.
Are they begging for a gray market here?
Well, I think they really kind of are begging for gray market, Mark. And they got into a little bit about what we talked about a couple of segments ago, which is everybody likes to think they can get a bargain. And some people do negotiate better than others. But it's like anything else. If the deal is too good to be true, it probably is. And particularly when you're talking about IT products, if you're a federal buyer or if you're GSA conducting a reverse auction on behalf of an agency, you want to look really hard at things like secure supply chain of the companies that you're doing business with. You want to make really sure that what you're getting is what you think you're getting. And I'm here to tell you that if you've got a product that usually sells for $1,000 and occasionally you see it for $900, and all of a sudden in a reverse auction somebody's offering it to you for $450, that's a flag. That's not an, and it's not a patriotic flag either. It's not an indication of that supplier's being overcome by patriotic duty and a sense of, you know, magnanimity towards the government. No, it probably is gray market equipment. So when you're going to be doing that type of reverse auction stuff, you need to understand that you are putting tremendous price pressure on people, and people are going to roll the dice and see if they can get one by you and maybe supply that gray market equipment in order to live with the margin. And then you didn't get a deal. You got something that's going to cost your agency a lot more in the long run because it's got all kinds of bugs and listening ears in it.
Mm-hmm. This is this is intriguing stuff. So has this shown up, walk like a duck thing shown up anywhere else that you can think of?
Well, I know that GSA is thinking about, you know, certainly we have the Smart Buy program mm-hmm. for software, mm-hmm. which is not technically FSSI, but certainly is a lot like FSSI. We have cloud, GSA looking at being a cloud broker. We already have the FedRAMP standard for cloud services. So all of these things will be where the government controls access to the market and requires people to adhere to either pricing or specific standards in the case of FedRAMP cloud standards. So it all speaks to a requirement that contractors have degrees of specialization and understand the pricing and other unique pressures of doing business in this marketplace.
Okay. So so basically, it's not buyer beware here. Well, it's both buyer beware and vendor beware.
Well, and these are the discussions, Mark, that we've had with the Office of Management and Budget and said, look, you know, if you're going to require certain things, we want you to actually have a requirement for a secure supply chain. You should know where this stuff is going and coming from, and it shouldn't have, you know, listening ears in it or be obsolete equipment that somebody got off of Amazon for pennies on the dollar compared to what they should have gotten it for. You're not really saving your agency any money when you're doing that. And OMB, to its credit, understands that. And when they're looking at rules, this was the context of the discussion, look, don't just penalize the contractor. Contractors that break the rules should be held accountable.
Right.
But if you have a government person who's expecting the unreasonable or unreal, they should be held accountable as well, because they're driving and encouraging bad behavior and essentially almost looking the other way if they get it, just to be able to say that they are the filings basement buyer for the government.
All right. So let's wrap up with a couple of thoughts on what current schedule holders need to be thinking of and perhaps manufacturers if we have time.
Well, in terms of current schedule contract holders, Mark, I think the good news for these for schedule contract holders is while schedule sales are down slightly year over year, owing primarily to sequestration, as a whole, the schedules program is a little bit more stable than other procurement programs. We've even seen venerable programs like Seaport E have their sales go down in this current fiscal year. Understand that there are going to be changes coming to your schedule contract holders, changes where GSA is going to be asking more data collection that I referenced earlier from you on those transactions that you're doing, so they can go back and show usage data to your common federal customer. I think GSA is looking at revamping certain parts of the program. One initiative that's underway that's kind of interesting to me, and it shows how GSA is addressing their FTE, their full-time employee issue, is they are combining the schedule and global supply operations in at least three GSA regions. They're going to be combining the operations in New York, in Kansas City, and in Fort Worth, Texas, with the idea that People who are traditionally working on schedules can work on global supply and vice versa wherever the need is. So there's going to be some changes coming to how and where your contract is administered.
Cool. Larry, always a pleasure. Again, my guest today has been Larry Allen. You can find him at allenfederal.com, allenfederal.com. If you need advice on how to prepare for SSI, I strongly suggest you get in touch with Larry. If you need advice on marketing your schedule, I suggest you get in touch with, frankly, either of us.
Mark's the marketing professional, dear listeners. He's being far too kind to me. Mark does a great job, and he's the person that I refer people to who want a good, bona fide marketing plan in the government.
We are a kick-butt tag team. That's for sure. You have been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio. This is not my day job. I am a marketing consultant in the government space. I also train companies on using LinkedIn, and with the downsizing the elimination of a lot of federal attendees at events, online networking is definitely a huge plus. But regardless, thank you for listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.